Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. 12 to 15 years ago, I was deeply frustrated in my professional life. Until then, I had developed a large number of HMI, human-machine interface solutions for the automotive industry. And we had big challenges during that time. How do we display information? We had limited display areas, limited display space, and 12, 15 years ago, I had the impression, all right, everything is done. The end, it's a decision. We're going to have a 5-inch, a 9-inch, or 11-inch display in a car. Are we having the entire thing in red, green, blue, or pink? But the big ideas, the big steps forwards, they had not, it seemed to me like they were not possible. Everything was developed in an automotive HMIs at that point in time. Before that, I had many ideas coming in and going, and my team at Harman and in the company before in CAA, they developed excellent solutions, and we brought them to the market, to the OEMs, and we can still see them in older cars driving around. But at that time, I was just like, all right, what's now? So I went to all the auto shows, I went to the CES, and I saw the solutions there and said, okay, I have seen everything. And they have a new color here and a new icon there, but there is nothing that really excites me. There's nothing new. And I seriously thought about changing the domain, doing something totally different, and maybe medical or industrial or apps or websites or whatever. And then three game changers. From today's point of view, we have three game changers that redefine the relationship between humans and cars, and with that, the role of the HMI and the design of the HMI and the development of the HMI. And three game changers, and the first one was automated driving. And we have automated a lot over the more than 100 years that we have cars. It's the ignition is automated, and we have automated gearboxes, we have rain sensors and light sensors, and automated low beams and high beams, and all that is automated today. What we experience these days, and this is the big game changer, is that we automate the core driving procedure, the core relationship between car and driver. So we get into the inner of the relationship of the human brain and the rolling robot. And that, of course, has significant changes. That causes significant changes in the HMI. How is it used? What can we do with that? If we have higher levels of automation, we have far more freedom of design to do things. Things like driver distraction, they play an essential role if you have the human in the control loop all the time. But if you have a level 5 automation, meaning fully autonomous driving, it is like sitting in a bus or in an aircraft or in a train, and somebody else is driving and you can do whatever you want. Anyway, we have this automotive HMI, this changes based on automated driving. And I have a couple of episodes in the pipeline So in the next weeks and months, I think I will talk quite a bit about automated driving, particularly because there are a couple of changes that we see there. The second point that has a serious impact on automotive HMIs are software-defined vehicles. Cars, until today, used to be more or less static objects. They were developed, planned, developed, and then produced, and then you buy the car at some point in time, and you buy it the way it is, and then it stays like this over its entire lifetime, the way it is. Of course, yet maybe some kind of fine-tuning, maybe new alloy wheels, or maybe a new car radio, but nothing really significant. Basically, yeah, a car was the way it is. It was a static object. Today, it's totally different. Cars are hardware, pieces of hardware, electronic hardware. And then you have software on this, and this software defines the vehicle. So it's a software-defined vehicle. And you can change the software, you can update it, you can add new features, you can add new designs, you can update the entire car if you want to. And you can give it a new behavior, you can give it new features, you can give it a new interior. That all this is possible with the software-defined vehicle. And little commercial block, I will be speaking at the WeConnect software-defined vehicle meeting early December. I'll have the opening keynote to set up the entire thinking there. I will focus on use cases. I was last year at the meeting and I found out, hey, they don't talk about use cases. They talk about technologies, they talk about safety, they talk about integration. Everything's super important to make it, to bring it to the road. But being a human factors guy, being a use case guy, putting the human into the focus of the development, this is a thing that I will talk about. And after this one, in December, latest in January, I will give you an update. I will give you a quick report on this software-defined vehicle meeting. The one game changer beyond automation and software-defined vehicles, the one I will talk about today is artificial intelligence. From my point of view, this is the next revolution in the relationship between human and car, between user and vehicle. There were two events in the past weeks that target exactly into this direction. The first one, and this will be the basis of what I will do about, was the Auto AI meeting. Again, a WeConnect meeting in Berlin in September, about 100 participants, combined with another automotive event they had there. So that was Auto AI, and this was not only on interior, it was not only on HMI, but any aspect of artificial intelligence in the automotive industry. So I will give you a couple of insights there, some of my takeaways, some of my learnings that I had there. And the second event that was a week before, a week after, I can't remember this anymore, but anyway, that was the final meeting, the closing meeting of the Carly project. This is a research project funded by the German government. It was a 3 years project. We brought that one to an end, and I will drop a couple of things. I've talked about the project already here in the podcast, and I'm going to drop a couple of things that are related to artificial intelligence and vehicles. I will focus on three aspects here. One is the use cases of artificial intelligence and vehicles. The second one is a quick glimpse on technologies and specifically sensors, sensor technology. There's a lot of discussion going on about what kind of sensors and what we will have, and I will give you a quick overview of that, and then this will be a larger part at the end. The open questions, the open points, the questions that remain. What do we as an industry need to solve to reach the next level with artificial intelligence? Let's start with the use cases. What I learned is that artificial intelligence in the vehicle industry is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Wherever you go, whatever you do, whether you do research and development, whether you do procurement, supply chain management, production, sales and marketing, after sales, service, in the vehicle to realize features. So it is everywhere. There is applications, there's use cases for artificial intelligence in all these areas over the entire planning and development production chain. And it is also in the vehicle. This is because learning algorithms, self-learning algorithms, find better solutions for multi-dimensional problems compared to humans. And this is my experience as well. If you have a problem that has 2, 3, 4 influencing factors, that is something a human brain can handle more or less. But if you have 25 or 100 influencing factors, that gets very complex. And computers can do this. And so whenever you have a multidimensional problem, an artificial intelligence may help you in this one. A subset of artificial intelligence is generative AI. This is what most of us believe is AI. That's ChatGPT and everything, all the other tools that we have out there. The automotive industry uses that to raise productivity, to get higher efficiency, to get a competitive advantage, to create customer value. And one thing that I saw at the CES this year in January at in Las Vegas is a tool of the company Rideware. They are developing tools for HMI development. And they had an artificial intelligence-driven subset of their tool. And the guy showed that, presented it to me, and then he said, okay, I'm going to have a pink cluster instrument and the speed on the left and the charging on the right and the driver assistance, the ADAS in the center. Please create me something. And then this AI created something like 5, 6, 7 different versions, and then we refined one of them. And so that is one way of applying, of using artificial intelligence in HMI design. My impression is very good if you want to have a quick and dirty solution, if you want to have something for a demonstrator. And some designers will, sorry to say that, will probably lose their jobs. At the end of the day, if you want to have something really individual, really human-focused, really human-centered, you will need a human to design this. But as a support, as something that is a quick and dirty solution, here artificial intelligence is already working. Let's have a look at the application areas. The one that had the most space, that has had the biggest focus on the Auto AI meeting, was automated driving and ADAS, advanced driver assistance systems. That is one of the focus points of artificial intelligence in vehicles. An interesting point here is that the tendency shifts away from level 5, from robotaxi, from full autonomous driving in the, let's say, traditional automotive industry. So it's moving towards more advanced driver assistance systems, level 2, level 2 plus, maybe even level 3. So we have a cool down there. The euphoria we had a year or two or three ago with level 5, that cooled down. And the companies that have level 5 cars out on the streets in San Francisco and Arizona and in Phoenix, Arizona, they are not traditional auto companies. They are, that's Google with Waymo, that's Baidu, I think it's called Apollo One or Apollo Up or something in China. So they're providing that, but they're not traditional car makers. And the traditional car makers, they're focusing on, they're putting their resources probably on electrification, on communication, on connected cars. So that is the general trend there. But for the remaining points in automation on level 2, 3, and on ADAS systems, artificial intelligence plays a significant role. One point discussed is, what do we do with the long tail use cases? So the long tail is if you have a statistics, you have a couple of events that happen very often. That's the same if you have book sales or CD sales or vinyl record sales. There is a couple of records that eat up a lot of things, and then there is the long tail with very low sales figures. That's where it comes from. And you have the same in use cases. Some of them happen every now and then. Detect a red traffic light, detect a person crossing the streets. That's happening very often. Then you have some very, very seldom. These so-called edge cases. If you have bad weather, you have a complex driving environment, how do we handle this one? One speaker said, and I believe this, there's about 1,000 kinds of objects on streets, on the roads. And 300 of them are very, very seldom. One example he mentioned is a kangaroo on a German highway. It is not impossible. It may be that you have a kangaroo on a German autobahn, but it's not very often. That's very, very seldom. And how do you handle this one? How do you make a system learn that there may be a kangaroo on the road? I mean, if you live in Australia, that's not a problem. You have them everywhere, and they jump around everything. But not in Europe, and not in the US. And just one example. The long tail can be solved maybe with generative AI. So you can create artificial scenarios, maybe even scenarios that have never ever happened somewhere, but they have a certain chance to happen maybe one day somewhere in the future. And if you have that one, and this could be one of the solutions, teaching artificial intelligence with artificial intelligence, so that you use artificial intelligence generated scenarios to cover the entire use cases, including the edge cases and including all the long tail. Second point here is the interior, the HMI. An infotainment system has about 800 screens today. So your navigation in your car, roughly 800. And about 160 contain some kind of settings, some things where you can manipulate something. And to handle this one long-term without artificial intelligence is hard down to impossible. So you may have the next generation speech recognition, which again gets better if you have artificial intelligence included. So you can be better with your recognition rate, with the success you have in such a device with artificial intelligence based the voice recognition. You can create safety, you can create comfort. And this is the point where the Carly things come in. We had three work packages there. One was motion sickness. How can we reduce motion sickness with artificial intelligence? And what can we do? How can we detect it? And how can we avoid it? In the Carly project, we had one study where we had people sitting in a car reading a book on an ebook reader, and we tested different kinds of visual clues that predicted the next horizontal, longitudinal, and lateral changes in g-forces, meaning if the car will brake or accelerate, if the car will turn right or left. You indicate that, and we try to find out, does this anyhow reduce motion sickness? And although we had a comparably simple solution at the very end due to technical problems we had, it works. So this is one thing where artificial intelligence works in against motion sickness. And first of all, it's about detecting it. Second was level conformity of behavior. So if you are on a certain level of automation in a car, you are required to show a certain behavior. If you're on level 2, this means you have to be in the control loop all the time. So the human is still responsible for everything that's happening. The car is driving basically by itself, but the control loop must be closed. The human must be in the loop all the time. And then if you see, okay, somebody is looking at his or her smartphone or reading a book, or having the eyes on the side window or on the dashboard, and then you can say, hey, guys, this is not level conformity of behavior. The question was, can we use artificial intelligence to detect it? And can we use it to give the right information, to write prompts, to create the correct level of the correct level of behavior, or the correct behavior for the active label? And we call this the mode match creator. So can we match the behavior of the human with the mode we have in the car? And the third one, the third area of Kali was the artificial intelligence HMI, which is the question, or asks the question, can we detect, can we see what are influencing factors? What kind of personality is the driver? What is the weather? What is the driving situation? Is the environment familiar, yes or no? What is the driving level? So detect all this, combine this, and then adapt the HMI in certain parameters to make it the best possible fit, to create the best possible usability, to create the best possible user experience, to make it as safe as somehow possible. That was basically the question we asked here. And again, AI in the detection, but also in the creation of the outputs. And we have created a couple of things, from an avatar down to a handover procedure. We tested all this in different user studies and found out, yes, artificial intelligence is useful in here. So these are typical applications of artificial intelligence and vehicle interiors and HMI. And one guy, one presenter said, if the users don't buy a feature, then we don't have a business. Means we need to create value with this one. We need to show that that driving with this artificial intelligence features and having this one makes the car a better car, makes the driving a more positive experience, makes it safer and easier. So if users don't buy it, we as an industry don't have a business. A couple of features, more features beyond the ADAS and automation and the interior. Infotainment, of course, using managing playlists, productivity tools, starting a telephone conference, making all the travel management, including charging points and restaurants to find them. Steering third-party applications like Alexa to steer my home. So I drive into the road where I live and I tell Alexa, please open the garage door and turn on the lights. Yeah, things like this. All the internal functionality, everything connected to the car itself, the driving modes and then the air condition. All these are features. Fact here, a problem here is how can the use cases get visible for the final users? What users don't understand, they don't buy it. How can we create trust in the data processing? Because if you have an artificial intelligence driven car and you do not have a local solutions, there was one presenter discussing local solutions. But most of that, and it makes sense to have it somehow centralized. And BMW said they have a 30% take rate of their data transfer. So 30% of all new BMW drivers allow BMW to use the data that they produce with their car. They believe it's not a bad take rate, it's pretty good. The problem is, does this represent the entire user group, or is this a self-selected group? Are there maybe very technology-oriented drivers that say, okay, yes, I want to have the benefits of this, and I know I have to pay with my data, and I will do this, and I understand a bit of what they do with the data, and I know it's totally anonymized, so I will do this. Yeah? Then we have a specific user group here, which particularly as far as artificial intelligence is concerned, has a very specific view and is different from the rest of the users. So maybe the remaining 70%, the vast majority, have a totally different view. But we'll never find out because they don't allow us to use the data. And this is a problem that we have this bias probably in the sample and with that in the data that we collect. So this is one of the open questions. So I'm moving forward already a bit towards the open questions thing. How can we get that problem solved in a way? Second point, after the use case, is the sensors. There are three sensors basically under discussion. One is camera, one is radar, and one is LIDAR. Or LIDAR. LIDAR. Radar, LIDAR, and camera. Camera is the basic one. All three of them have advantages and disadvantages. They all have their strong and their weak points, and all of them are under discussion in a way. Tesla makes it very easy. Tesla says we use cameras only. They claim that they thought about this, and they say that a human has his or her eyes only, and there's only visual, and the camera can get even more than a human eye, and with that one we have enough data to allow safe automated driving and to feed the artificial intelligence algorithm with this data. My point of view on this one is they're doing this for price reasons, because cameras are cheap and camera processing is comparably easy, and so at the end of the day, everybody believes that Tesla is a very advanced and high-tech car. From my point of view, this big screen, for example, they have in the car, this is not because they believe that big screens are a big step forward. Big screens, that's what they know, is the cheapest solution you have at the moment. So if you have a big touchscreen, you don't have any buttons, that's the cheapest thing you can have in a car. And if you have a look at the Tesla, they always use the cheapest part of the cheapest supplier to net it together. Anyway, I will not convince Elon Musk to do something else, so he will do what he thinks is right. Camera is very good in the classification of objects. It detects lanes, traffic lights, traffic signs. And it is very good in the angular discrimination. So you can know exactly where things are and how they're moving. Radar is good in measuring in large distances. It's very exact. And it works, opposed to cameras, on poor light and weather conditions. Plus the fact that radar allows you to measure the speed of objects. LiDAR was almost dead. So a year and a half ago at the CES, there was a comment that all the suppliers are showing LiDAR solutions because they developed them and they cost them a lot of money. But at the very end of the day, LiDAR will not work. LiDAR has two very significant disadvantages. It's very expensive. And it doesn't work under bad weather conditions and under bad light conditions. But it has a couple of advantages of the radar thing. It's good in large distances. It's very exact. Can measure speeds. But it's also able to classify objects, to see lanes and to be localized. These are advantages of LiDAR. My personal position is there will not be one sensor. Tesla has a different way, but everybody else says we need a combination, either camera and radar, camera and LiDAR. These are the usual combinations that you have so that you can compensate with the advantages of one technology, the disadvantages of another technology. Let's move on to the third part, the open issues, the open question. What do we need to solve as an industry to move forward with artificial intelligence in cars and in our industry? Behind every digitalized car, you need a digitalized company, basically a data factory. You need the platforms, you need data, you need to think and act in data. This is happening on a limited level only today. So this is not ubiquitous, it's not everywhere. China is a little more advanced compared to the European and the US American auto industry, but still there is a lot of room for improvement to think the entire process, the entire platforms, to think the car as a part of the Internet of Things. This is including all the consequences that this has. Second point is, where does the data come from? Data collection is slow, it is expensive, you have a lot of edge cases, you have a lot of things in a long tail. You have a multi-dimensional matrix. So you have maybe 5 different weather conditions, you have 1,000 different objects on the street, you have different kinds of users, you have different kinds of environments, different countries, you have different traffic laws that you have, different kinds of signs. And yeah, so it gets multidimensional quickly, it gets massive. And the nasty thing here is data ages quickly. Things that are today absolutely okay, things that are correct for today, they are outdated tomorrow. And data quality is essential. It's absolutely core. If you put bad stuff in, you get bad stuff out. There's another B word that people usually use. I don't want to do this here. Bad stuff in, bad stuff out. And one of the speakers said, if you train an artificial algorithm with the entire internet, you get a porn-addicted Nazi. This very radical statement shows how important data quality is. And the quality question here is, how good is good enough in the data quality? How good is good enough? And for the models, how safe is safe enough? Here again, you can put enormous amounts of time, money, resources, and focus into the very last steps, into the very last percentage of gaining data quality and gaining safety in the models. And that's where the money goes. That's what costs you at the very end. Then I learned during this conference that there is a new industry coming, which is the industry of data labeling. It's coming up. There were 3 or 4 different companies presenting their solutions for data labeling. And I had not been aware of that this is such a huge thing. But if you think a bit about it, of course it is. You create videos and you create data sets. And then somebody needs to say, all right, this object on the video is a truck. And this one is a dog. And this one is a child. You have to identify this and you have to teach the algorithm what is what. And that's not only once, that's a million of times that you have to do this. To make it, we are back to the data quality, high quality data that you can use. And these companies, they are creating jobs in low-cost countries like Africa, and Africa is not a country, it's a continent, but like in different countries in Africa and Southeast Asia, those are locations where they create jobs. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing is a totally different thing, but that's what's happening. Another question is, how do we handle false positives or false negatives? Imagine you have a piece of paper, a newspaper, being blown over the street and the car hits the brake. So you have a false positive. The car needs, there is some kind of obstacle that I need to brake for, and it breaks. The other way around, some false negatives. Some car believes, oh, there is nothing, but there is a child running onto the street and it doesn't break. That's a false negative, which is super expensive, not only by money, but first of all by ethical issues that you have there. And the problem here is, and this is not only on artificial intelligence, this is on the entire automation of driving, that you have this problem. Yes, and then at the very end, how do we handle the enormous amounts of data that is created and that is required to do this? So today, a car produces about 1 megabyte of data per day and can send this to some central servers. In a foreseeable time frame, we will have 1 megabyte per second, not per day anymore. How do we transfer this data? Where do we store it? How do we analyze it? All these are open questions, and all these are things that we need to solve if we want to create reliable and good artificial intelligence solutions in the automotive industry. And one speaker brought it down to the point. He said, the world is a mess and it resists to adapt to our plans. The world is a mess and it resists to adapt to our plans. All right, that's it for today. I talked about artificial intelligence in cars in the automotive industry. I talked about use cases. I talked about interior HMIs and features. I talked about the sensors, camera, radar, and LiDAR. And I raised a couple of open questions that we need to answer as an industry to be successful in the future. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.